Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 77. All right, it's true. I am officially on tour. The Chaotic Good Tour has begun. Thank you so much if you came out to the Wilbur Show in Boston. It was insane. I met so many cool people, and it was truly a pleasure. So I was honored that so many people came out. Thank you, thank you, thank you a million times. More dates on the Chaotic Good Tour. April 15th to the 17th at the Irvine Improv in Irvine, California. Then May 6th, the Varsity Theater in Minneapolis, Minnesota. May 20th, Littlefield in Brooklyn. June 4th, Showbox in Seattle. June 10th, the Magic Bag in Detroit. And more dates will be added very, 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 very soon. Also, make sure and come out to Nerd Melt, Nerdist at Meltdown, May 2nd for the live podcast with Kevin Pereira. And that brings me to this episode. This is the Black Dynamite night that we did our second official Nerdist podcast show at Meltdown. It was insane. I mean, like, beyond anything I could possibly have imagined, it has become the nerd clubhouse that I wanted when I was a kid. We're having the panel for Black Dynamite in the back room. In the front of the store, people are playing D&D. Adrian Young and the Black Dynamite Orchestra were setting up out in the front of the store and playing music from the movie while the huge line after the panel got their comic book signed, Slave Island, the first edition of Black Dynamite. So it was just amazing. We showed the Black Dynamite cartoon, which Adult Swim just picked up. So all in all, thanks again for everyone who came out to that. Nerdist at Meltdown is in full swing, and we invite you to check out meltcomics.com, the events calendar, to see what other shows are coming up. So, I'm going to shut up now and present to you the Nerdist Podcast number 77, live with the Black Dynamite cast and director, Scott Sanders.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast of Black Dynamite. I am so...
Hey, Chris.
Oh.
Hey.
Jonah.
Chris, over here on the other side of the table.
Visual gag not translating for audio podcast listeners.
Fuck the home listeners. This is for them.
Yeah.
You know, at first I thought you were saying fuck the homeless. I'm like, that is a strong stance.
Oh, I did. I figure anyone who listens to our podcast is homeless. I just make that assertion.
They found iPods.
Yeah.
It is nice to see you guys down there. I wanted to save the middle seats for our guests.
Well, obviously.
So that's why we put you down there.
It's very nice of you.
Of course. Thank you so much for coming, you guys. I mean, did you guys... How many...
Do you like one of the best comedies in the past 10 years?
Did you?
Fuck yeah, you did.
I'm going to say of all time. And I don't want to...
I mean, I don't want to sit up here and blab too much with just the three of us because I really want to get this panel underway. If you guys have some questions, there's going to be a Q&A section at the end of the show, so be prepared. I believe these T-shirts are up here for us to give away.
That is correct.
So if you ask a good question, you get a T-shirt. If you don't ask a good question, we get to take your T-shirt. So just know that
careful,
there's
chubby people.
And if it doesn't fit, fucking lose some weight, losers.
Yeah, Matt's lost 50 pounds.
That's right.
50
so,
pounds.
So rub it in everyone's faces.
So without further ado, I would like to introduce, first of all, you know him as Bullhorn. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Byron Mins. Yes. Also, the author of Slave Island, the Black Dynamite comic book, Brian Ash, is here as well. The director of Black Dynamite, Mr. Scott Sanders. And of course, the titular character of Black Dynamite, Michael Jai White, is here as well. Oh my gosh. Thank you, most Caucasian person ever. I, too, can dig it. Watch me digging it. Oh, my gosh. This is such a tremendous honor for me and also a testament to the power of podcasting. Scott Sanders, just a little quick backstory. About a year ago, Jonah Ray would not shut up about this movie called Black Dynamite. He was like, you guys have got to see Black Dynamite. It's one of the best comedies I've seen in the last 10 years.
You guys are welcome. You guys are welcome.
Thank you, sir.
And he literally talked about it so much that finally I was like, okay, I will watch this movie to shut you up.
Yeah, because why would you listen to your friend who you share a similar taste with?
And so my girlfriend and I it was on Netflix streaming. We watched it. And within the first 5 minutes, I knew, like, this is one of the best comedies I've ever seen in my life. And since then, I've been obsessed with the movie. Scott, you must have had some sort of a radar that heard your name get mentioned on the podcast.
Well, it'd be funny because it's like you guys mentioned it like 3 or 4 times. I started listening to the podcast, and I like you get into a situation where I knew you were going to mention it.
Here it comes.
So I'd be getting on the subway and be like, yeah, Cedric Yarbrough did this thing. Oh, yay! You know, chocolate giddy up, blah, blah, blah. Like, there we go. We're going into it.
So Scott Sanders comments on a thread on my website, and he was like, I'm the director of Black Dynamite. Thank you so much. I'm like, oh, my God, is that the real Scott Sanders? And we traded emails, and, you know, we actually had you on the podcast. I just didn't put it up yet because I knew that we were going to do the panel. Mm-hmm. So we arranged all this with Ars Nova. Thank you so much to them as well. And we made this a full Black Dynamite night. So I guess, you know, let's just ask the most obvious questions. How did the movie come about? How did you guys get involved? What was the story?
It was weird. I was doing this movie called Undisputed 2 in Bulgaria. And I was listening to my iPod, and I had this James Brown, like, you know, playlist, and on comes Superbad. And for some reason, I just got this idea of this movie. At first, the movie was called Superbad, but then we got beat to the punch.
Mike really wanted to call it Superbad. He's like, can we do a Superbad with like 3Ds?
Right.
Maybe not.
Color Me Bad had the one with 2Ds.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the Apatow movie, I'm like, why the hell is this one called Superbad? what has got to do with it? But anyway. I had this vision with, you know, about it. And I, as soon as I got back, I ran to these little vintage stores and you know, did my own like my own little like dress rehearsal and got all these vintage clothes. Incidentally, the exact outfit, this exact outfit, I got this thing.
Well, that's the exact picture.
You wore a black dynamite shirt. You found a black dynamite shirt. That's crazy.
But this outfit, I you know, rented this outfit from a little, like, you know, costume house and took a picture. It was this exact picture, right?
So this picture became before the movie or any idea of anything.
And so, you know, this whole idea, you know, I you know, had a gun and nunchucks. I'm like, that's a little bit too far. You know, I'm like, that's the tone. And Scott and I were talking. I've been wanting to work with him again since we did this movie, Thick as Thieves, years ago. And he gave me a script, another movie that he was talking about doing something. He was asking me what I was up to, and I said, man, I got this idea of this like lost 70s movie, but you know, it had the whole concept of it starts here and it ends there. And I showed him the picture, and he's like, dude. This is kind of interesting. and then it's like, you know, we just kept talking, but then it's like he calls back later. He's like, no, really, Mike, that idea, you know, it's really, and it gets, it had been several things I tried to get Scott to do over the years, and you know, and he's got, you know, discriminating taste, you know, he don't care, he'll DJ, he won't just direct anything. There's a lot of big movies that you know, that you guys know about, that he's been offered, that he will just like,
start naming them.
Flat out
Steel Magnolias.
I mean,
Transmorphers.
But yeah, but so I mean, so I listen. I'm like, you know, Scott really is digging this, and I think, you know, we work so well together, and then it just became like, you know, he just, you know, he was like, I have this friend, you won't believe this. I have a friend who does nothing but 70s music, and he plays 70s instruments for what? I don't know why. But he's like, you know, which is AJ. Why is AJ not, where is he?
Adrian, he's setting up.
Yeah. But it's like, it was like this thing that, you know, it was Scott and AJ, and it was me and Byron. Byron and I, you know, old friends. Byron is like a walking encyclopedia of black exploitation movies. Like, Byron could just, like, you would talk, you would throw out a movie, and what he's doing, like, a whole monologue from a movie, and it's like, it's insane, you know? So we all got together, and it was just like, it was just a symbiosis that just lasted, and it was just magical when we were all together. We could figure it out and be going on this road or whatever, but we all come together and we all knew when it was right, mm-hmm. you know? And it was just that chemistry, it's just like, you know, it's just amazing when you got people who, you know, they all get it.
Do you feel like it's possible to engineer that, or do you feel like this was just the sort of weird astrological chemistry that we all just happened to have?
Yeah, it is, because everybody did like three things. You know, it's like, but we, you know, like AJ is also the editor.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and he composed the music and he's editing. And but everybody, you know, we were so used to doing so many other things.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we could be like, oh, he's director and caterer.
Yeah. And did it have to be that way? I mean, was the budget on the film? Like, was it like, well, people kind of have to act and cater at the same time?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was pretty low. I mean, for, you know, there's like 70 sets. It's, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's period.
Was it low
action.
Enough that you were worried about the eggs? Like, oh, if we could do a second take with those eggs, we are shot for the day.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's why they're carrying eggs, because glass would cost too much. So, like, it's like, does it really have to be 6 dozen? Can it be 5?
Right. 5's funny, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Just one egg.
Yeah.
Byron, what's your favorite blaxploitation film?
The Mac.
Okay.
The Mac.
And what was it? What was it particularly? Because, I mean, blaxploitation film, for me, it seemed like, I mean, I won't claim to see every one. I mean, I won't claim to see seen every one, but
everyone can tell.
In the beginning. I can dig it. But they really like, you know, sort of halfway through the peak of the genre, it just feels like they are really just going way over the top. And you know, did they even do a second take of that shot? Like, so what was it? You know, what was it that you think that sort of spawned the genre, and like why did it survive?
I think initially, you know, it was taken more serious. The first one being Shaft, which was a serious detective, you know, film, and then, you know, it was pretty strong images, great music, what have you. But I think once they got wind of the fact that these were making money and basically keeping Hollywood afloat, they were willing to make anything. And at that point is when you
this sounds very familiar. Yeah.
This isn't the Hollywood I know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Because one of the things that's so great about the movie is that, you know, you can tell. I mean, you are satirizing the genre, but you are also paying a loving tribute to the genre at the same time. It doesn't feel mean or derisive in any way. It feels like it's fun.
Yeah, we wanted to pay homage to the entire genre. It's you know, like there are the movies like Mac and Shaft that can stand up to this day. I mean, I challenge anyone, look at the Mac and then look at something that's comparable, like Hustle and Flow. And I tell you, the Mac actually stands up, you know, dramatically in a lot of ways, even though they did it on a shoestring budget. But, right. You know, it really was political. It had a lot of, you know, there were these movies that were done by the studio, and they were, you know, done with care. And later on, of course, it became blaxploitation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, that word blaxploitation, after it got exploited, that, you know, there was these big empty movie houses in the inner city, and you know, they got people, you know, found out that people would, you know, go to these movies over and over. Then there was these movies that were like, you know, cost about like $1,500, and then you just, you know,
and they had black in front of the title. That always helped.
Oh yeah,
that helped you know there were black exploitation.
Exactly. Like, any white movie that made it, they had a black version. It was like Black Godfather.
And Black Steel Magnolias.
Yeah. The worst one was Black Shampoo.
Yeah, Black Shampoo is
literally,
which is actually that same pose. Mr. Jonathan has like a hair dryer in one hand and like a chick in the other.
Yeah. They just didn't even.
That's real. You
know. There's almost a meta story going on where in a blaxploitation film where you get the creepy old white boss of the movie that's pulling the strings, that's the movie studio that's pulling the strings at the same time. So you guys, there are definitely two movies going on in Black Dynamite. There is the story of Black Dynamite, and then there is the making of Black Dynamite as well. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, that was like always kind of Mike's idea. He's always like, you know, to approach the character, he was he wasn't just Michael Jai White playing Black Dynamite. He was Michael Jai White playing Ferrante Jones. You tell him about Ferrante right. Jones, the running back for the Baltimore Colts, who was playing Black Dynamite.
Right. Actually, see, back then, the majority of the black action stars were former football players. Mm-hmm. You know, unlike, you know, well, you know, like nowadays they were like rappers.
Yeah.
But they were all football players. And so basically, like, that Ferrante Jones was a guy, I mean, he created all this stuff about him. You know, him being, he had his neck broken in a tackle. You know, I started to do this thing where, you know, like, if you notice, like, Black Dynamite has a problem turning his head one direction. But yeah, to, you know, to go down that route of this Ferrante Jones character, and you know, but it's you know, so, you know, we wanted to be true to the time.
Oh, you have to go deeper down the rabbit hole, and you have to make the Ferrante Jones documentary.
Yeah.
We were talking about doing like Ferrante Jones now.
Yeah, exactly.
Working in a car wash.
Scott, didn't you say you also had a character on set as a director?
Oh yeah, that's right. Like, I was trying to stay on board with it too, so I imagined myself like as like this hippie Jewish dude who hung out with like Black Panthers. and as the course of the movie was going on, was smoking more and more weed. And then like, oh yeah, it'd be cool if like Nixon came in, man. That would be awesome.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone approach a movie that way before, where the entire cast and crew takes on other.
It had to be at the time, like, you know, we had to come up with the baddest cat out there. You know, he had to be badder than Shaft and Superfly. You know what I'm saying? He got to do this. You know what I mean? So you got to outdo the rest of the movies. You know? So the actual stars are the writers, the revolutionary writers from back in the 70s. You know what I mean? You see, you know, their heavy-handed approach to creating this, like, Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Byron, who was your character? Did you have a character? Did you play a guy playing a guy?
I think it was T. Purvis Washington.
I'm pretty sure that was it.
But we did that in the trailer. Like, I always thought that Bullhorn was just, it was like Rudy, more like, you're a Bullhorn playing Bullhorn, right. You know?
Yeah, at the end, it became me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you start out, like, how did you get funding for the movie, and how did it evolve from vintage photograph to feature length film?
We did this trailer. We ran around, we spent about $500 and some odd and shot a concept trailer, which you could find it on YouTube still.
YouTube thing still, I think.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, but we ran around, stole all these locations and stuff, and, you know, just created this, you know, 70s, this raw 70s trailer. And then, you know, we put it together, edited it, and sent it to John Steingart, who's in this room somewhere back
there. Yeah, John was back there. I met John back there.
He's our producer.
Hey, John!
And so I sent it to him, and then he goes, so why are you just sending me this old blaxploitation trailer? And he's, you know, worked with Mike before in our other film. I was like, that's Michael Jai White. He's like, oh, I can raise the money for this. I really? Do you need a script? Because that might help. Like, nah. I mean, if you want one.
So how much of it was there a lot of improvisation on the set, or was the script pretty tight?
Pretty tight. I mean, there was improvisation in the pimp scene. You know, we got those brilliant minds. I mean, Cedric Yarbrough came up with the best.
That's the best. That's the awesome line.
Best off the cuff line. You know,
I think we should say it as a group. Yeah. So you say your line, and then we'll all say ours.
Okay. Yeah, because I mean, actually, that was the hardest time I had to keep a straight face.
Okay.
You know, because he came off with that when I was like, you know.
what was your line before Cedric's?
So, what was it? Somebody help me with this.
If I catch you,
be that as it may.
No, well, that's what I said afterwards.
Oh, that's what
I said. Yeah, I'm declaring war on anybody who sells drugs in our community.
But Black Dynamite, I sell drugs to the community.
There you go. Very good.
It's funny. I ran into Cedric recently, and like I told him, I was like, oh, that line is like my favorite line in the movie. He's all, yeah, that was mine. I made that up. That wasn't in the script. I was like, oh, it's great. It's really funny in the movie. Yeah.
I mean, the pimp scene was, we had Arsenio Hall in that scene as well. Who else?
Captain Kangaroo Pimp.
Captain Kangaroo Pimp, yep.
Classic pimp archetype.
Yes. He was funny because he was like an extra, like, who just, you know, like, you're an extra in a movie, you just come to work that day, and then all of a sudden you have like a hot chick sitting in your lap and you're a Captain Kangaroo. He's like, this was a great day of work for my $75.
I hope his IMDb page says Captain Kangaroo Pimp.
Incidentally, that's the deciding factor for Arsenio Hall to be involved in the movie. He read that scene and he said, Captain Kangaroo Pimp, I'm in.
I feel like there could be a whole separate series of fan fiction based on Captain Kangaroo Pimp, if someone were dedicated. So how long was the shoot? How long was your shoot?
It was 20 days, and then I think we had like 2 or 3 days of green screen days. Damn. So it was pretty quick. Mm. It was crazy, man. Because there was a lot of stuff. There's like a half an hour that's not even in the movie. So it was like, I mean, there was one day we had, there were other presidents in it, because this was my idea that didn't really work, but Black Dynamite comes out of the into the White House, and the White House is full of booby traps. So it's just like statues of presidents, like Theodore Roosevelt has a gun and just like points it at him, and like, you know, they're just like, it's just all booby trapped. That's
yeah.
Like
I kick off Theodore Roosevelt's head, and
oh yeah,
and then
then Lincoln. George Washington, a statue of George Washington, tries to throw an axe at him. And
it was a Scooby Doo moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was a little too Scooby Doo.
So when you watched it, you were just like, I don't need that in there.
It's like okay, this, you just want to see, you know. I don't know. It's just, at that point, you want to see Black Dynamite kick real ass and not just statue ass. I don't know.
It's always a problem, statue ass.
I mean, statue ass.
And you are in phenomenal shape. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that. I mean, you can see
Chris. I mean, he's in pretty good shape.
I mean, he hasn't lost 50 pounds recently, like Matt Myra, but. But you're in phenomenal shape. I mean, you did all the kung fu yourself, correct?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh damn.
I think it's pronounced kung fu.
Yeah, it's kung fu.
Kung fu.
Kung fu. Yeah.
Did you choreograph the fight scene, or did you bring someone in for that?
Yeah, I brought a buddy of mine named Ron Yuen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we kind of, you know, choreograph things together. It's like, you know, we do that for fun anyway. You know, that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And so it's just like we had a whole lot of fun.
That's the fiendish Dr. Wu's brother.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha. Yeah. You, of course, were Spawn as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah.
Thank you.
And it's just so amazing to see. This is just the comedy snobbery in me, but it's so amazing to see someone who is in as peak a physical condition as you can possibly be do masterful comedy at the same time.
Thank you.
So
unfair. It's a little unfair, to be quite honest.
It's unfair for us sloppy white nerdy types who will never be that physical. But did you have any sort of comedy training, or what was your?
Well, my friends. I mean, I. My friends always kind of consider me pretty funny, even though, like, I mean, other people don't, you know, see, because I kind of look mean. Like, you know, when you kick somebody in the face in a movie, they kind of just brand you as, like, the tough guy.
But you kick one asshole in the face, and all of a sudden,
it's like...
And I just don't look like the comedy type at first, because, you know, it's just like, this face is this... You know what I mean? It's just...
I just say, Mike does that even, like... He'll do the frown. He's like, where do you want to go eat?
Right.
I mean, like, you're going to catch me just thinking of something else, you know?
Right. You know, I'm wondering why are people scared? And it's like, you know, I'm like, I'm thinking about, like, kittens playing with cotton balls. And I just look like this, you know? But anytime I work on a film, there's it's like a comedy version of it. Mm-hmm. On set, you know, it's like I'm just plagued with this thing where, especially if I'm serious, I'm supposed to be like in some serious situation. People don't know, but there's all kinds of goofy shit I'm fighting against.
Yeah,
you know, so it's like I look like this, but there's goofy shit that's just like there's like
it's Benny Hill
this,
in your
say
hand.
This and all this, and I'm like, you know, I'm fighting my demons.
Let me tell you one of them. Excuse me. One of them is Mike has this thing about killing mascots. So that thus the donut,
right? Yeah. My wife thinks I'm crazy. She, like, well, the whole family, when they see somebody dressed up in an outfit, they try to like, no, they just because
you must be crazy to bring to Disneyland.
Yeah.
No, he really means he's fighting Goofy.
Like I just, you know, I don't know. I just want to torture, you know, those guys in mascot.
Yeah, because they got it so good. You got to take them down a notch.
Or sweaty.
High on their horse made of felt while they're in a suit made of felt like a horse.
Why is he kicking me in the midriff?
They're just so silly.
They got that stupid handler that makes sure they don't get heat stroke. Fuck them.
So, you know, I'm committed to any movie that I'm, you know, producing or director or whatever. There will be a mascot, like, torture. In the movie, I just directed this movie called, well, Never Back Down 2. And there's, if you look really closely, there's a party scene, right? There's, you know, a college party scene that's going on. And if you look way back, there's this moose being tortured.
Yeah. I want to see. Then I want to see like in another Black Dynamite movie where you like run into a furry convention and you just go ape shit.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
Did they have those in the 70s?
They probably in a weirder way. Or just guys were really furry.
Greasier, just, in a greasier way.
Their keys were in a bowl. You know, it's the 70s.
Don't dress up like a bear. You wouldn't like honestly, me when you dress up like a bear.
It's not. Is it? It's not just me. Is it? I mean, do you not want to tackle those guys? Please, can show me some hands.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, okay.
You probably fucking loved it when that guy on the Brewers hit that sausage with the bat. Remember that? You were like, yeah, fuck that hot dog mascot.
Well, I would always, for some reason, the San Diego chicken always really made me mad.
See?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's just that idea of him being like, hey, everybody, look at me. And I'd be like, shut the fuck up.
Clothesline would be perfect. You know, just to imagine he's being goofy and you just, somebody just runs up and just close.
There must be a weird fetish for this. There must be a weird like fetish site watching the mascots be brutalized.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The closest you get is people shitting on mascots. Sorry, I had Google one night. And it was
but it's kind of like they're okay. They're in a puffy suit. You know what I mean? It's not gonna hurt them that bad.
Yeah, but there's a chewy center, and that's a person.
That's an interesting point. Do you feel the same way about Chewbacca?
Oh, well, yeah, Chewie, yeah, he could get it too.
He complains a lot.
You'd be the best Lando. Fuck you, Chewie.
Oh my god! If they ever did like more prequels, and it was just
don't
like,
put it past them. Oh. Shit, 2012's coming. Gotta make more money.
Oh yeah, seriously. But what you guys managed to do, and I thought it could never be done, is so many people have tried to recapture the Zucker magic, and no one ever gets it right. I've never seen it since the early Zucker brothers. I've never seen anyone get it done do it properly because people always play the comedy. And you guys finally were like, no, we're going to play it straight. We're not being funny. We are serious. This is serious. And that's one of the reasons why I think the movie works so well. And even in all the booms coming into shots and stuff. So what was that layer of the movie?
With the booms and the shots?
Yeah, just all the weird. And like during the fight scene, how the actor just turns into someone else.
Well, a lot of that stuff came from Dolomite. I mean, like in Dolomite, you would see the booms and the shots. They'd be right there. Like, you know, like the great thing about Dolomite, and I think it had a lot of influence on us, is just that it was a movie. Well, he was a comedian, but, you know, and he was making a movie, but the funniest parts are not when he's doing his comedy. So it's just like when he gets really serious, it was always really, it was like this path of funny to me. Like he would be having sex in a movie, and we did this in Black Dynamite where you'd see the POV, you're under him. Like doing push-ups. I was like, and you could tell that like Rudy Ray Moore wasn't saying like, oh, this is really, really funny. He goes, god damn, I'm sexy. This would be hot for the ladies to see. You know?
Unfortunately, he had to fuck a camera guy.
Gotta make it real. I have to make it real.
Well, that's the thing. My cameraman for the scene where he's Black Dynamite's POV, he's standing over three porn stars dipping down like this at the camera, and it's like there's a picture of him, and it's like it's all over his house, like my greatest moment,
etch it into his tombstone.
Yeah.
So what I feel like this, you told me this when we talked to you on the podcast, that when the actor gets slapped in the scene, that was for reals.
Well, it wasn't. I thought that came from in what was the second Dolomite movie? Human Tornado. Okay. Ernie Hudson. Ernie Hudson was in the Human Tornado, and he was in a fight scene. Mm-hmm. And then they were finishing the fight scene. Ernie Hudson couldn't show up that day. So they just had Ernie Hudson's brother come in. So it's like... Is that where that came from?
No,
that could have been
that one. That job was definitely not worth $11.5 a year.
Yeah, Ernie Hudson's brother was like 6 inches shorter than him. Yeah. Yeah. But the idea of that split take is just that sometimes they just tried to, like, well, I just wanted to tell a story. in that thing where this guy got replaced because he went crazy and like attacked the guy and they recast it, you know, like
there was a fight. Only, there was a fight.
Yeah. So you
they had to be carried out
a story that, you know.
So in between the shots, like, that motherfucker is here tomorrow.
Right.
Isn't there a little bit of that, too, with the scene at the cat house where, like, the prostitute finishes Black Dynamite's line and he just, like, goes apeshit on her?
I never thought of that. It was.
Yeah, that was
what
Berante
was
Berante Jones
thinking at that point?
It. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was just one of those things where, you know, I never wanted Black Dynamite to be too damn cool. There's something that's always fighting against like one of his soliloquies. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? So like, you know, when he's on a soapbox, you know, he's you know, that's when the boom comes. You know, when he's trying to get too smooth, it just kind of takes it back down because he fucks it all up. You know what I mean? You know, so I just wanted to always have this kind of balance. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? So that's kind of what came up in my mind. It's just like kind of.
I also love the scene where you guys figure out the master plan with the insane like Greek mythology and then they're spinning all the way around. How did that...
Along with chicken and waffles, that's
yes.
it.
Oh yeah, genius, the discovery of chicken and waffles in Black Dynamite. But how did that scene come about?
That was something that he was adamant about. I mean this was something that was in his mind from the very beginning. Before, you know, anything was figured out about the mythology, this leap of logic was going to happen.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like you see in a lot of movies. It's like, okay, they're defeated. Everything is it's done. And, you know, they're licking their wounds. And it's like, you know, oh, you want a Tic Tac? A Tic Tac. That's it. You know what I mean? So, you know, you see that in things today. You know what I mean?
Like every
CSI,
week on House.
You know, it's like,
on House,
you know, yeah, all the time. It's just like, it's a stab at that type of thing. But, you know, we bring it to the land of ridiculousness. Yeah. And I remember when I was writing that there was like a whole day of like, you know, I was walking around going like this. And my wife would say, it was a whole day of that.
You were actually connecting in your head.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just like, you know, it was a whole day. Like, she's like, just leave. here's your food. You know. And so it was like, you know, all of that and then putting it out. And then.
But it's weird because there are a couple of things would get pulled out. And I would look, because my mind could not operate in this loop-de-loop there. I was like, Mike, we can't have a, because it was supposed to be like Python malt liquor. It's another malt liquor. What do we do? It's like, And you go to like, and plug in like Anaconda instead. You know, like, if one thing had to be pulled out before for some legal reason, you know, it had to be replaced and.
I would do.
Yeah,
and then figure out some kind of weird ass connection.
Yeah,
and bring it around.
But it's funny because we got like we're gonna have Little Richard in there. We're trying to get Little Richard to actually do an ad. Say Anaconda malt liquor gives you ooh, you know. But like because we like Little Richard, you know, like old dudes like money and stuff.
Yeah.
So like, I like the money. Woo! So we had to like, I was like, Mike, we can't get Little Richard. Well, we'll just say it. Oh, then we don't need Little Richard. There you go. But then we also like, somebody did call us out on the area code, 785 BC.
It came later.
Yeah, it came later. In my back of my head, I kind of knew that, but then I didn't want to cause trouble.
Yeah.
Someone bring that up like, for me. At a Comic-Con, that ruined it for Brian. How much of the stuff that how much of the going wrong stuff in the movie actually went wrong, and how much of it was staged? Like, how did you? Because it was so well done and so organic that it didn't. None of the accidents seemed forced.
My two favorite: the guy curbing the door on the car.
Real.
That was an accident.
Accident.
That was an accident.
Yeah. Maybe genuine. I don't know. I couldn't see. Maybe the same extra forgetting to put the car in park.
Yeah. That was an accident too. It's not the same actor, but that was absolutely an accident. That we kept in. Yeah. I was like, that's perfect.
Were you, Scott, were you just overjoyed when that happened?
It was constantly.
Or were you
like,
too busy being thinking I'm Jewish and eating weed?
Yeah, well, I mean, even like, yeah, because I was acting exactly. I was like, yeah, that's fine. Let's keep going.
So great. So
but then, even like, there's a boom shot in a Byron scene where he comes in and does that really connecting karate kick. That wasn't on purpose, but it's kind of in there. So I was like, oh. That's pretty much my director's style on Black Time. Like, that's about right. One of the big ones was we had like five porn stars in the movie, and in porn, like, the whole gig is you look in the camera, you know, like, that's your thing. I'm looking in the camera. Like, no matter what your scene is, it's like, you know, you're right here. It doesn't matter. And then like the camera guys were like, they're looking in the camera. I was like, oh, that's... Wait, that's okay. All right, why not?
I like when he was directing the three girls, and it was just so funny, because he's like, okay, you're breathing. Oh, okay, and now come.
That's exactly how I have sex.
And that was probably, like, the most gentle day of work they had in years. Yeah.
That's what they said. They're like, this is easy.
And I'm getting $75.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I think the obvious question is, why isn't there a Black Dynamite 2? Is that coming?
We're getting a lot of interest for it, so... Yeah.
You'll sell at least this many tickets.
Yeah. Thank you.
I mean, where does Black Dynamite... Like, I guess in the sequel, Black Dynamite would have to go to Europe. Right? And then in the third movie, space, maybe?
Yeah. Oh, space is reserved Jesus. For four. You got to have a fourth
sequel. That's the fourth movie?
Yeah, Critters.
Yeah.
I've been laughing about the sequel for a while in my head.
So you see there's a mascot.
Some crazy stuff, you know, in mind that, you know, when it comes down to it, it's going to be kind of interesting.
Now, what was the theatrical release on this, and how did you sell the movie, and you know, when did it go to video? And
okay, see what happened. We went to Sundance, mm-hmm. and we had a midnight screening, and we sold it overnight. And it was really funny because my mom called me up. She's like, you sold a movie already. I'm like, what? It's printed somewhere? Like, I don't know how my mom knew in North Carolina. But. And
I got to go. I got Bob Weinstein on the other phone. Thanks, Mom.
And then it was released in 70 theaters. And it did well in some theaters, but not in others. So our average was kind of off. Mm-hmm. And then it was really weird, so we were all kind of bummed. And then me and Mike went to these people in San Francisco. Was like, well, we didn't have Black Dynamite. Can we have the movie? It was like 2 weeks later. We're like, okay, sure, fine. So we go. We're in like the Castro District driving. And like I looked at Mike, he's like, that guy looks recognizable. And it's like there was a guy running around as fiendish Dr. Wu. Yeah. I like, how come these theaters are packed? Like, so we played in the Castro, and then we played at in Oakland, and in Oakland it was like completely packed, and so they had it play like you know, extra screenings, like midnight shows for like a month. And then like I went, like, I'm from Washington D.C., and then there was a show there that was like completely sold out. So it was really weird. It was one of those things where it became like a cult movie like within weeks, which was kind of strange. It's like almost connected to the actual release of the movie.
And, you know, I think it's all just been word of mouth. And honestly, we've talked about it so much on the podcast, and I still get people who send me emails and write on Twitter and say, I finally watched Black Dynamite, and oh my God, you were so right. And I can't believe I didn't see this movie before now. Mm. And being here tonight and watching the screening with people, it was the same exact experience I had. They screened Airplane at SF Sketchfest a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. And watching the same exact experience, both movies, like watching the jokes play in front of a large group of people, it just brings it to a whole different level. I mean, you must have felt like, yes, you're laughing in the right places.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, was there anything that still at this point that you feel like, did that people miss their like little tiny jokes that you planted in the script, or do you feel like people have caught everything?
They've caught everything.
Yeah. But not the first couple of times though. Like,
so, yeah, I mean, you know, but by now.
Yeah, by now they have.
Even a little, you know, kind of, you know, we kind of constructed it in a way where there's different layers, mm-hmm. and some things that you're definitely not going to hear firsthand. I always wanted there to be a smattering of laughter and a large part of the audience not know what was funny. And like there's like little jokes for like even like Vietnamese speaking people. You know, because basically, like, you know, when Black Dynamite is saying, you know, what was it? It's like I'm saying, you know, he said something.
Like
cartoon shit, like
Buku
Sao, you know, and Black Dynamite knows what it means, meaning why dynamite, why, but Buku Sao means you're full of shit in Vietnamese, and so there's a layer underneath that for Vietnamese speaking people going, well, no, he said he's full of shit. You know? And like there's other things, like even for, you know, Mandarin speaking people, they know that I'm not saying what's written in those. I'm really not saying what's written.
We're not saying emancipate and proclamate on your ass in Chinese.
No, I'm saying a bunch of real street nasty shit. Yeah.
So your approach to this movie was really to make several different movies right. for people to.
Yeah, there's a bunch of little things that, you know.
Do you know, in that scene though, it's weird because like a lot of jokes I realized they weren't jokes too for years.
Right.
Like, because I would read stuff on like line. It's like people, especially the scene where he's talking about the kid with in the hut, mm-hmm. and he's like I just reading people like, what kind of ceiling fan is in a hut in Vietnam? I was like, oh yeah. I guess they wouldn't have a ceiling fan.
And another one, your mother would turn over in the grave as she's.
Yeah, I missed that too.
Yeah. Like, we have seen it like, I don't know, 20 times. He's like, oh shit, I just caught that.
But even like when I was directing it, I mean, and this might be a bad thing, but it's like, what he's talking about, like, he was flat on his face. He looked up at me, burned from prison. I just shot a kid. Like, he's not burned. He's not on his face. He's not anything. Just like, none of that shit he's saying has anything to do with what's going on in the movie.
So, I mean, I guess, are you doing more comedy stuff now? Or are you doing more action stuff? Or what?
You know what's weird is, like, if you look at the body of the things I've done, there's like almost 50-50 comedy in it. Mm-hmm. Like, but it's still like the whole, you know, I kick people in the face, so you don't notice. So it's like, you know, like in the, you know, the Tyler Perry movie, like I'm the comic relief in the thing. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things I've done on television that's got this comedic thing. And but you know, it's just like whenever you see me serious in a movie, believe me, when they yell cut, I was doing something goofy.
Well, what's great is that you seem to work on a lot of these movies. Like, I don't, out of the Black Dynamite garb, mm-hmm. I don't know if I would have recognized you.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Which is good, because I worry about the Leslie Nielsen type of thing.
Right.
Because if I look too much like myself, then, you know, I could be in a serious drama and you're like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so because, you know, Leslie Nielsen, you know, would be, you know, God rest his soul. I mean, it would be very difficult for him to do Naked Gun and then do a serious movie.
Yeah.
Because the nature of his comedy is pretty darn serious.
Yeah.
So you'd be waiting to laugh and he's like, you know, oh no, I want you to cry now. He's like, you know, so I didn't want to be in that situation.
Yeah. I forgot what Mike looked like, because every day he show up as Black Dynamite. And oh, this is still Mike. He also looked like my dead dad. You know? Because, like, everybody, like, all Black men of that era kind of look like that with big, bushy mustache and afros. So it'd be, like, kind of weird. Like, hey, Dad. And then all of a sudden, like, the end of the whole thing, he's Mike again. I was like, where'd Black Dynamite go?
Well, I think part of the reason why we're here tonight is also because of the Black Dynamite comic, which Brian Ash is here. Yeah. I'm sorry we are only just getting to you now, Brian Ash. But But when I heard that there was a Black Dynamite comic, it sort of filled my soul a little bit, because I felt like, oh, thank God, I get, you know, like there's at least some way that I can consume another Black Dynamite story. So how did you get involved with Slave Island, and what was the story?
I felt the same way, actually, when they told me that they wanted to do a Black Dynamite comic. I was like, holy shit, like there's going to be more Black Dynamite.
Yeah.
The people at Ars Nova, who we'd been working with, Carl Jones, my writing partner, producing partner, and I, had already been working on developing Black Dynamite, the animated series. Mm-hmm. And Ars Nova came to me with a story that that Mike and Scott and Byron had come up with called Slave Island, basically. Mm-hmm. And at first, it just scared the shit out of me. They're like, we want you to write something called Slave Island. And I was like, that's really terrifying. I'm not really sure how to approach that. we got into it and broke the story, and kind of, you know, what we really tried to do with the comic book was really do what they did with the movie in terms of trying to create an artifact of an era, do a certain kind of storytelling that's kind of a bygone mm-hmm. style of storytelling, and take the character Black Dynamite, who from like watching the movie over and over again as a fan, and you know, you see how much backstory there is and just how many places this character theoretically has been before and can go next. We put him in the Charlton Heston role, basically. You know, Omega Man, Planet of the Apes, or you know, Westworld. This kind mm-hmm. of insane pseudo 70s kind of sci-fi story, and that's kind of how we sort of got into doing the comic book that way.
And the artwork is gorgeous too.
June LaFamia, who did the artwork. He's this legendary artist from what's called the Filipino invasion of the 70s. There was this big movement in the 70s where a lot of Filipino artists just kind of came in and did all these books and just brought this incredible, like, gritty, realistic, like, grounded style to, like, fantastical, insane stories. So for me, I kind of felt like, you know, we saw a couple of contemporary artists before we settled on June, and everybody's artwork came across, you know, they did tests and it looked like Undercover Brother, or it looked like I'm gonna get you, sucker.
Right.
But it didn't feel authentic. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the only way to get the authentic look was to find a 74-year-old man in the Philippines to draw it. He was the real deal.
We've all been there, my friend.
They're selling the original panels out there, and I bought three of them.
I bought
that
two.
I want to put up as a series. The middle of the series is just a full frame Black Dynamite just walking down the street. Then I bought the one where Black Dynamite punches a shark. And there's an impact crater on the shark's face where Black Dynamite has generated enough force underwater to punch a shark.
Fuck that shark up.
And then the other one, of course, I had to get Black Dynamite sexing up the white plantation lady as well. So I'm going to put those up in a series, but just gorgeously, gorgeously drawn.
Yeah, I got two of them. I got one for my son and one for my daughter. One is there's a female lead, a romantic interest. It's kind of a Pam Grier character. Yeah. So I have her sort of
that is pretty fun.
Yeah, attacking a bunch of the people for my daughter, and Black Dynamite attacking people for my son. So
yeah.
So I thought Black Dynamite riding in on a horse.
Yep. And then the comic is out now, right? It's actually yes. available now. Is there a place? Would you just get it at comic stores? Can you order it online as well?
I believe Meltdown is carrying it.
Meltdown has a ton, but for the
podcast, I think I'm an asshole.
Well, no, because I'm going to podcast this, so this will go out to other non-LA places.
Hi, everybody. Amazon.com has it as well, and also through BlackDynamite.com as well. It can be ordered as well.
I mean, did you have any concept at all, like when you made this movie? Just the runaway kind of viral life that it would have afterwards.
It just landed differently. You know what I mean? Because it was always kind of up and down, and then it's like something happened recently, like where we were like it was just on Stars, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden I'm like sitting in my like whatever in my apartment. It's like, oh, it's trending on Twitter. It's like, wow, that didn't happen when it came out. You know. It's like 2 years later, you know, so it's been a very weird journey, but it's been great. It's been fun. I mean,
are people offering you tons of money to show up to events as Black Dynamite?
No, not yet.
I feel like that's going to happen. Like you'll get are you guys going to Comic-Con this year?
We went. Mm. No. Are we? We went to.
You heard it here first, everybody.
We went to New York Comic. We went to Comic-Con. Right when it was coming out, like we went to Comic-Con.
Got to go back this year if you can.
When is that thing?
That's in July. That's the third week of July.
Right. Oh, okay.
We were there. And then we were at New York Comic Con, too.
There's going to be a lot of people dressed up, Michael.
There will be a lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of mascots.
I'm telling you. Oh, shit. Oh, my God. Michael Jai White, the actor who played Spawn, attacked.
Last year, guy gets
all
stabbed.
All of Comic Con.
This year, fucking.
Right.
If Ars Nova people are listening here, you've got to set up a booth at Comic-Con, sell the Black Dynamite comic, and have a signing. You guys would fucking crush at Comic-Con if you went this year. I'm telling you, if you set up a screening at Comic-Con, it would be insane.
It was funny because we were there right before the movie came out, and we had like a little room. We had a little room, and like you know how at like Comic-Con people just stay in the room?
Yeah.
So like they were like, I don't know, why are these little pixie girls here? Like, they're like all in the front. Like, are they, like, I just didn't get it. Like, are they Black Dynamite fans? It's like, no, they're staying in the room. But they're like, chee! Like, cheering everything, you know? I don't know.
Like pixies do. Yeah, I think you guys would crush at Comic-Con if you're there. I would love to be able to open up the floor to a few questions if people have questions and they're good, you'll get a t-shirt. Yes. Oh, General, you want to throw in a thing?
Hey, guys. I love how authentically Los Angeles this was and how you were at the Santa Barbara Plaza and the Flying Fox and the Mavericks Flat. Isn't the guy that owns Mavericks Flat an actor? Wasn't he in some films? I think he was in Black Shampoo.
That was John Daniels. Yeah, that was his place.
So was he there during this? Did you have a real guy that was doing this in the day watching you make this movie at Mavericks Flat?
Yeah, I think so. I remember he was there.
I thought that was pretty cool. That
he wasn't like, can I be in your Blaxploitation movie? Because I used to...
It's funny they shot the Dolomite like the last Dolomite movie there too. It was really funny because like our location guy also just said, "Well, let's go back to Mavericks Flat for us," and so it was just kind of funny seeing it again. But
excellent. Yes, you have a question right here.
Did Black Dynamite learn how to use nunchucks, or did he come out of the womb knowing how?
Oh, he came from the second answer. You know better than that. Yeah, you know. Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. Now, here's an interesting ethical question. I'm trying to figure out what Black Dynamite's alignment is. Would Black Dynamite burst through his mother's stomach, or out of respect to his mother, would he come out calmly? What is Black Dynamite?
He would do whatever is the least damage to her vagina.
That's what he would do. What would Black Dynamite do?
Well, you know, he came flying kicking out there.
With nunchucks. Yeah, it was and crazy.
And the doctor got smacked back.
and baby Black Dynamite said, "Now, mama, I used excessive force here, and for that I apologize." Yes, sir. Second row. What is your name?
John Frisano.
John. Hey, Michael.
Hey, John.
What's happening, Captain?
How you guys doing tonight? You great. A little sadomasochism. But anyway, Michael, you were in The Dark Knight, and you were Spawn, and Kill Bill. When are you going to play the Black Panther, brother?
Why didn't you mention the movie that you wrote? Okay. Universal Soldier, the writer of Universal Soldier.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
These are the kind of awesome people that are coming to our panels. This makes me very happy.
When did you play the Black Panther?
Well, I mean, you know, Scott and I met with those folks over at Marvel, and, you know, it's on a slow burn. And
yeah.
I don't know, we see what's next, but we... I told him my take on it. I'll be Obama that will whoop your ass.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I would love to see. I would love to see, since they're going to reboot Batman after the Nolan series, I would love to see you and Donald Glover as Batman and Robin.
That'd be awesome.
I think that would be fucking amazing.
That would be great.
I mean, you would be an incredible Batman. I mean, like, but dark, but humorous, and then and Donald Glover could just be that spry, acrobatic Robin.
I really wanted to get Spider-Man. That would have been really funny.
That would
hold the Donald Glover Spider-Man thing that was going on
until his agents got a call from Sony, and they're like, "Can you please ask people to stop this movement because it's making us look like assholes?" Like,
oh yeah,
Sony. Like Sony called and asked them to stop pushing for Donald Glover for Spider-Man. They're like, "We're not going to give it to him. We're going to give it to some foppy British kid." And
we got one right here.
Oh, right here, this gentleman right here. What is your name, sir?
My name is Tony.
Hey, Tony.
And how you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Hey, I got to say that each character in that film really stands out in their own way, and to me, it's really entertaining. But the one character that I hate that died was Bullhorn.
Why did Bullhorn die?
And I just got to ask, what was the motivation behind creating Bullhorn?
It was Rudy Ray Moore. He was a great inspiration right there. Yeah. We wanted to pay homage to him, and that's what that was about.
I got you. Yeah. And I feel good.
Now, if Bullhorn died in the first movie, of course there's got to be a way, if there's a sequel, that somehow...
I don't want to give it away, but there's...
He's got a brother, right?
His brother Megaphone?
There's a Black Dynamite logic that occurs that you know, that justifies it.
That's good to know. Yes. Wait. Oh, you... Well, let me get this gentleman first, and then you, and then what is your name, sir?
Brian. Hi.
What is your question? I'm gonna awkwardly touch you.
I like it.
Oh, I'm gonna stop touching you. No, now don't touch me. Backfire. Abort.
That's a one-way street, friend.
Okay, what's your question?
This might be a silly question, but I just loved the way Jimmy talked. In that first scene, the ridiculous way he talked.
Oh, yeah. Baron Vaughn.
Is there any way we can get more of that in the animated series, in the sequel? Because those few lines were just not enough for me. Yeah. I will just admit that.
Well, I mean, the idea behind it is that, like, a lot of the actors who were in blaxploitation movies were, like, you know, classically trained Shakespearean actors. And so he just ended up on a blaxploitation movie.
Also, Baron Vaughn's stand-up comedy sounds very much similar to that. So check it out.
But yeah, you can watch some blaxploitation movies like Blackula, that guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's a theater guy. There's,
yeah, theater guys.
Yeah.
Willie Dynamite.
Willie Dynamite was Gordon on Sesame Street.
Oh.
You know. Yeah.
But the pimp in Willie Dynamite,
Bell.
Oh, my God.
Was it Ron Bell?
He played Bell. The character's name was Bell, and he was like, they
YouTube
just played
this damn scene. Willie Dynamite pimp scene. And just, if you can remember that, you look at that thing, it's insanely funny.
Very influencing our scene.
This was the guy who played Gordon on Sesame Street?
Yeah, no, Gordon's in it. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
But look at the guy who runs the pimp council, and I'm telling you, it's like, and that, and they were serious. They were serious. When you see this, they were serious. This guy could not, I mean, here's overacting. This dude was here.
Yeah. And it's weird because it's like almost like a gayish vampire pimp. You got to collectivize. It's like that. It's like really strange.
What is your
name?
You can't
control your bitches.
Hi, my name is Paris. Hi, guys.
Hi.
My question is, for our first, the first time that we saw it was in the Burbank Media Center, or nearby. Yeah. And before the movie, they actually showed the promotional videos for Fight Smack in the Orphanage.
Did?
Yes, they did. And I was wondering if that was all part of the first run, or if you did that for any other special screenings.
I didn't know they did that. And that's where I saw it. I saw it at Burbank, but I didn't. They did the fights. They played the Fight Smack in the Orphanage in Burbank?
Yeah, they played the commercials, and we were like, oh my gosh, this must be like an exclusive thing. So we thought.
It was really exclusive. I didn't know about it.
Way to go, Burbank. You did something right, Burbank. Yes, sir. What is your name?
My name's Mike. Actually, I just had a follow-up on that. Are you guys still fighting smack in the orphanages?
A fair question.
Oh. I thought you were going to actually ask the guys who fought smack in the orphanages.
Is smack being fought in the orphanages still?
I don't know. I don't know.
In the Black Dynamite cartoon, there is fighting for the children.
Okay, good.
On their behalf.
Yes, sir. What is your name?
Kai.
Okay, Kai, what's your question?
I have a question for Bullhorn.
Or Byron. You know, he's a guy. This wasn't a documentary. Did you think that?
he was born Bullhorn.
Okay. That's fair. I love Bullhorn, too.
Byron. What the fuck? Does put your ankles in it mean? What does it mean?
What is what?
P- Put your ankles in it. Where did it get it from?
It means put your foot in it so far that your ankles are in it. I mean, how did that happen, though? That was a line that Mike threw in there. Yeah. Yeah, that was.
I mean, Rudy Ray Moore had this. He used to say, "Put your weight on it. Put your weight on it." Yeah. Yeah. And so Bullhorn had to have his own.
That's what it was. Also, I think it was what was that? Was that the Human Torn? No,
Disco Godfather.
That was Disco Godfather. Disco Godfather.
Yeah. Where he said, "Drive. Put your foot in the tank."
Oh wait, that was Human Tornado. That was Human. Drive, motherfucker, drive.
So yeah.
Thank you.
Excuse me. What's your name?
Matthew.
And what's your question?
You guys are amazing. First of all,
thank you so much.
Yeah, you guys. There's obviously a comic book. There's an animated series. What else do you think Black Dynamite's gonna spawn? No pun intended.
Uh-oh. Nice.
Black Dynamite video game. Oh my God, like a sandbox game, like just fucking run around and beat the shit out of people. Yeah.
But it's gotta be for the Wii, so you can use the nunchucks.
Yes.
Well, we'd like to announce right now that there is going to be
a Black Dynamite cereal.
Oh my God.
Does it change the milk color, a different color?
It turns the milk black.
And we have marshmallow hose.
Marshmallow
and cream corn puffs.
Yes, cream corn. Oh yeah, I mean, I haven't even mentioned Tommy Davidson yet, and fucking phenomenal.
And Tommy Davidson's been with us from the beginning. He was in the original trailer that we did, the $500 one, playing cream corn.
How did you? Were you just friends with Tommy before?
I'm good friends with Tommy. You know, I've known him for years. That guy's like amazing.
Yeah, he was great. It was cream corn. No, like I can't stop. Any other? Behatted fellow over there. What is your name?
Lior.
Hi.
Just the kung fu bitches scene in the dinner situation. I mean,
come on,
just,
you can't say it. You sound like you're in film school. The kung fu bitches scene was shot on a.
No, but just the one who's just running by, swinging her arms. Who choreographed that? It was flawless.
How was she swinging her arms again?
Okay.
I mean, that's homage to the 70s. I mean, when is the last time you've seen a karate chop? you remember the karate chop?
You're a martial arts expert. You must use it all the time.
And that actually was in the kung fu bitches scene from Dolomite. At the end of Dolomite, there's literally women swinging at nothing. They're just like, just wildly swinging, and they don't know karate, so it's like.
And if you haven't seen Dolomite, you gotta see his brand of kung fu.
It's worse than Bullhorn. Like, yeah.
And just Dolomite, I mean, his delivery. You know, I mean, and it's like he had this interesting thing. If you watch him, like when other actors were talking, he just go dead, until his line, like ask me what we gonna do now, Dolomite. Oh, we gonna take it to them fuckers, and we gonna tell them what time it is. But that's the thing, he just goes dead every.
He's saving it for the show.
I think we have a couple more questions over here. Yes, sir. I this cord won't reach, so you'll have to step forward.
Was it tough finding vintage cars that were in good working condition? And for Michael, I heard there was a. McFarlane's been talking about a reboot of Spawn for years now, and I was just wondering, is that ever happening?
Why are you doing that? Must be some strange habit.
So more of a, it's an interview instinct.
I hope so.
Yeah, those are good questions. How did you find the cars and the condition?
They're not too many. I mean, we had like guys who did the car thing, and I mean, they're like maybe seven. I mean, if you look at the movie, they reappear quite a bit. we had a pacer that was like there for a couple of shots. Like a lot of things in Black Dynamite reappear numerous times, like the wood paneling. That wood paneling is in like 17.
Wasn't there an extra that gets shot? Like
I kill him 6 times in this movie.
And he plays Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
Bonus.
Yeah. That's Pete Antico.
Yeah.
So and the second question about Spawn, the Spawn movie?
I don't know. I mean, he distracted me with this. Oh, sorry. So what was the second question?
McFarlane was saying there was going to be a reboot of Spawn.
Oh, he's been saying that for. he's been saying that for a long time. You know, I mean, hopefully it will be, but soon, I'm going to take that in my own hands. Mm-hmm. And do it the right way. You know, it's like it's about time.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? Let's just tell a story about Mortal Kombat, like in terms of taking it in your own hands. Like yeah.
Like, oh, really?
Go ahead, ask your story.
Oh, yeah, we got a big Mortal Kombat launch on the 14th of this month. It's going to be like a web thing, and they're working it all out, you know, the details for the movie, to later on in this year to, you know, do a Mortal Kombat movie, but very dark. I don't know if anyone's seen the
it's a great
Mortal
trailer.
Kombat movie. Yeah.
But they just did like that. They did that like on spec. Like they didn't even have any rights.
We could have been sued.
Yeah.
So we just did it. We just shot that. And then, you know, at first, you know, Warner Brothers was like, oh, we're going to. How many people saw this?
Well, they should have been sued for the Mortal Kombat movies they made.
Right, right. And a weird thing was, I was supposed to be Jax in the last two Mortal Kombat movies. Oh. But, you know, the first one, it came at the same time as the Tyson movie. And the second one came at the same time as Spawn. And so I ended up going another direction.
Wise decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't beat that song, though.
Whoops.
Hey, what is your question?
What is Black Dynamite's weapon of choice?
Oops, sorry.
Weapon of choice is his intellect, his brain, brother.
Good answer. I think it's time for a couple more questions. You, sir, you'll have to come forward, though. I can't reach you. We don't have wireless mics here at Meltdown yet. Someday, though. What is your name?
It's Trevor. First off, I came down here from Seattle, so...
All right, man.
That explains the accent.
Oh,
welcome. Exactly. We all sound like that up there. The rain, it gets to our brain, it melts it, actually. First question, they made 2 more Mortal Kombat movies? Did they? I have no idea, I was just informed of that. But there's this one scene, actually I was wondering, there's one scene where you're running through the orphanage, and in the background there's a giant sign that just says orphanage.
Oh, yeah.
Do you own that? Because that's fantastic. Is there an orphanage that has that?
Well, that's sort of like in Black Dynamite world, things are just named what they are. Like, if you go to the community center, it just says community center. The community center doesn't actually have a name.
I'm going to tell everyone up there about this.
Actually, thank you. Now, are you actually British, or are you a Seattle trust fund kid who went to England for a week?
Actually, all right. Blow your mind for a second. I was actually raised in Hong Kong. Partially Hong Kong part.
It's all right. It's not.
But I had British tutors there. Oh, gotcha. And so they basically enlisted British people to come down, teach us the accent.
Then you guys had to give Hong Kong back on TV. That was embarrassing.
They did a good job.
Yeah, and I was...
Maybe we'll podcast you someday. Any other a couple more questions? There's a gentleman right here, and then I'll work back this way. I can't even reach you. You'll have to lean forward.
No problem.
Come here.
Yes.
Pause.
This question's for Michael. Do you still have the red polo shirt that you wore?
Weird.
Red polo shirt.
The red polo shirt during the after you just got
got all the smack off the street. You're wearing the red polo shirt.
That's mine. No, I mean, literally, I had that shirt before Black Dynamite.
That shirt's in the original trailer, too, actually.
Yeah. I had gone to a 70s party and bought some stuff and didn't throw it away. So I pulled that stuff out and I wore it for the movie.
You know, that is admirable because I have a whole closet full of shit where I'm like, someday I might be in a sketch where I need a big fedora. And I'm like, I've never been in a sketch where I need a big fedora. I just have a pile of stuff.
I'm just a hoarder.
How many 70s? Dead cats do you have? It's hoarders. That's what they do.
Yes, madam. But you have to come here. I'm so sorry. Just push through.
You know, at like the Rocky Horror Picture Show midnight screenings, how they have the little rituals, like they have the newspaper and they yell like slut at Janet and stuff. Mm. What would you hope people would say and do at Black Dynamite midnight screenings?
Maybe hold up waffles when Bullhorn says, those buttery motherfuckers will melt in your mouth.
Excellent. All right, that guy back there. Come on up here, son. Come here.
What is your name?
My name's Dwayne.
And what's your question?
I was wondering, Mike, the whole time you were ooh, is that yours? Or is that Jim Kelly?
No, that's Jim Kelly.
So you guys dubbed that in, though? Is it?
No,
that's
me. That's hooey! You know, Jim Kelly had that particular yell, and even when he's like in the middle of fighting, it's like whoop 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 whoop, hooey! You know, and so I mean, you know,
because in Kill Bill, like when you're you bastard. I was wondering how come Tarantino cut that up. Like, do you do voice acting? Have you appeared in any movies or cartoons?
Quentin and I are friends, and we goof around like that all the time. I was supposed to do this fight scene, and the next day he's like, "Do that voice. Kind of Aussie. You know, hey, where you getting? You know that thing. You know, we clown around with each other all the time. It's like." I killed your teacher. Now I'm gonna kill you too. You know that whole thing, and I couldn't believe that he wanted me to do that in the scene. And I'm like, "Are you serious?" He says, "Yeah, you do it." But you know, I mean, that scene got cut because it don't belong in a damn movie.
All right, I think we have time for one more question here. Who is? Oh, a guy in the back waving his hand. Get up here, quick! Hell yes. Hello.
So all right, Mike, all right. It's been a few years since I see you. How you doing?
Okay.
My name's Jesse.
It's so great when old friends come together. I mean, the podcast audio portion can't capture the true magic of this long-awaited reunion. Let's all just take a... I'm kidding.
You're so clever. No, you probably haven't seen me since I was 13. I'm John's stepson right here.
Oh, okay.
What's
up?
Yeah.
I'm a cock. It was uncalled for on my part.
You're forgiven. I have a question for Byron, actually. I think Bullhorn is like one of the greatest characters ever conceived on the silver screen.
Thank you.
I love Bullhorn. And you were talking about earlier how you guys have a character you play who is playing the character on screen, and yours was something Washington, right?
Yeah, T. Purvis Washington.
Right. So I'm curious, because watching the movie, it's like, what is he? He's obviously not a trained Shakespearean actor. He's not a football player. I get the feeling the guy playing Bullhorn was like a real pimp or a real drug pusher. Somebody that the producer of the movie owes a favor to is like, man, I want to be in a movie. And he's like, yeah, give this guy a part. You'll be Bullhorn. Like what's the backstory behind the guy playing Bullhorn?
To tell you the truth, the way I always imagined him, he was a nightclub performer, pretty much like Rudy Ray Moore. Who had that talent to rhyme and what have you? Yeah.
There was a scene that was cut out with the entrance of Bullhorn, and he does this kind of rhyme, this poetry to the bongos, you know. And we kind of miss that, and I'm kind of wondering if he remembers it.
Yeah. I want to tell you a story about a friend I have had.
He's a mean motherfucker and he's super bad. So grab onto your seats and hang on tight. Why tell you a story about Black Dynamite?
Fantastic. Well, there's going to be a signing out here afterwards for Black Dynamite comic book Slave Island, so make sure and pick it up. Yes, and also Adrian Young will be playing with the Black Dynamite Orchestra out there as well, so you will hear a mid-roll Black Dynamite music. Please, everyone, please join me in thanking Mr. Byron Mins, Brian Ash, Scott Sanders, and of course, Michael Jai White. Thank you for coming to Black Dynamite here at the Nerdist at Meltdown.
Thank you, Nerdist.
We will see you later. Thank you so much. Good night.
Dynamite. Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.